Indeed, I can give you my flash drive. Oh, there we go. So the information that I want to cover today is provide some updates on some of our surveys, talk about our harvest survey, our herd composition survey, our efforts on radio collaring and monitoring cow elk survival. We'll talk about, of course, our aerial survey that we did this year, and then I'll end with a little bit of population modeling. So harvest surveys, we gather and collect hunter information on elk harvest in two different ways. First, our hunter surveys. These are like a lot of our surveys that we do for other species like deer and pronghorn. We survey all of our elk hunters, however, and we do this with our typical report cards. Also, we use some electronic means as much as possible. This last year, we had 82% of our hunters respond via electronic means. We had over 80% response on our surveys, so a lot of great participation from our hunters to provide us some really good information on hunting seasons. For elk, we also have a mandatory check. If you harvest an elk, you have 24 hours to check that in to Game Fish and Park staff, either our office or one of our 11 check stations that we have throughout the Black Hills. These mandatory checks allow us a unique opportunity to collect some information on chronic wasting disease, also some additional harvest information, and we get some harvest age data. We get this by collecting the two front incisor teeth on each harvested animal, and we send that into it's called Matson's Laboratory in Montana. This is a laboratory that specializes in taking teeth from all sorts of wildlife species and sectioning those teeth and aging them for different wildlife agencies and even members of the public. So we take those age information from the teeth and we break it into four categories, as you can kind of see on the graph here. I'm sorry those colors don't come through really good. But our four categories are calf, yearling, 2 to 3 year old, and 4 plus year old animals. I want to focus you on the 4 plus year old animals. That's the red bars on the bottom. So we're looking at the proportion of our male elk teeth, the harvested elk in the Black Hills by each age group. We have in our management plan, we actually have a population goal that's represented by the arrow there. We have a population goal. We want at least 30% of our harvested bulls to be in that 4 plus years of age or older category. You can see here, looking at the red bars, we've been well above that here the last 3 years. In fact, this last year we were at 74% of our harvest in the Black Years in the Black Hills was aged at least 4.5 years old. So this is something we've definitely exceeded our goals here the last 3 years. I do want to make note, though, we established that 30% goal in our management plan based on previous year's data. You can see we didn't used to be that high. But also previous year's data was represented by a different age analysis technique. So I think when we revisit our management plan here this year, this is one of those thresholds that we should reevaluate and talk about where we need to have that target. But the bottom line is we did meet that target this year. Now looking at our harvest data. So here we have years dating back to 2013 all the way to this past year. Looking at the number of tags sold, you can see here the first couple years on the chart, we were managing the population conservatively, and then we ramped up harvest by increasing the number of tags. You can see the number of applicants there. Elk hunting in South Dakota is very popular. This last year we had about 1,300 tags and over 30,000 people trying to get one of those tags. Our harvest this past year, about 423 bull elk and about 380 cows for a little over 800 animals harvested. In our management plan, we also have some goals with regards to harvest and hunter success. We have a goal that we want to see at least 60% hunter success for those elk hunters that have an any elk license. And you can see here, last year we had hunter success was 75% for those with an any elk license. So again, we met our management objective there. I want to jump into our fall herd composition surveys. This is a survey that we do in August. It's a random ground count. This is where we get our age and sex ratios for our elk herds. So first, looking at our age ratios, we express our age ratios in calves per 100 cows. This is our best estimate of fall recruitment for elk in the Black Hills. You can see here the graph has our age ratios, our calf per 100 cows in the green bars there, all the way back to 2009. Our long-term average is represented by the red arrow there, is about 48 calves per 100 cows. This last year we were a little lower than that. We were at 43 calves per 100 cows. So not what we'd like to see, but we can still grow elk just at a slower rate with that type of recruitment. Now looking at our sex ratios, and we express our sex ratios as bulls per 100 cows, and this is important for population modeling. We need to divide out how many animals are bulls and how many are cows. And so again, we use this herd composition data to do that. You can see our long-term average of 27 bulls per 100 cows, and this last year we were approximately around that average at 28 bulls per 100 cows. So now I want to talk about our survival monitoring efforts. These are important because adult cow survival is really an important driver of any elk population, and being able to track that really helps us be able to track what that elk population is doing. So we've been capturing and radiocarring adult cow elk since 2015 here underneath this effort. We use a helicopter in the wintertime to do this. This last year, here just a little over a month ago, we went back and we captured and collared 35 adult cow elk. Currently we have almost 150 animals on the air that we're monitoring for survival in the Black Hills. We monitor these animals, like I said, for survival, but also these are important to help us update our population models, and we want to relate that cow survival to the impacts of harvest, and I'll show you a brief demonstration of that here in a minute. This last year, it's pretty exciting. The collars that we put out were all GPS collars. We haven't been doing that in the past, and so we're going to get some additional information on these animals, like habitat use and movements, that I'm really excited to see what that turns out to be for us in the future. And I'd be remiss to say, not say anything about Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. RMEF has been a great provider of funds for this effort. In some years, they've paid for 100% of the collars and 100% of the capture cost. So again, they've been a great conservation partner in this project, and without them, we surely wouldn't be able to do the amount of work that we've been doing. So just taking a glimpse at some of our survival data that we've been gathering since 2015. You can see there in 2015, we had a really good survival. I got a column there of sample sizes too, just to give you an idea over the years of the sample sizes that we've had to make these survival estimates, and kind of give you an idea of how precise some of these estimates might be. Pretty good precision. Most of our estimates are usually plus or minus 6%, so good estimates. But you can see here in that first year, looking at cow harvest, and this is adult cow harvest, you know, we're just over a little over 300. Adult cow survival was really good at 87%. And then we started ramping up cow harvest in order to try to maintain our objective that we have in the management plan. And we did that. Cow harvest went up, and lo and behold, survival went down. And that trend continued until we backed off on harvest again, and then survival came back up. And of course, you might be saying, well, that seems pretty intuitive. Do you need collars to know that? And yeah, it is intuitive from past research that we've done and other folks have done on elk. But having collared elk in the Black Hills allows us to actually to quantify that. And so it gives us the ability to better predict the impacts of any antlerless licenses on our elk herd here in the Black Hills. So we're building some really good important relationships here between our cow elk survival and the number of antlerless licenses we have in the landscape. So the last thing I want to talk about is our aerial survey. And before I dive into that, first I want to talk a little bit about some of our sightability models. So we know from past research that not only that we've done, but other western states have done, that anytime you get up on a plane or a helicopter and try to count animals, you miss them. You just don't see them all. And so We use the sightability model actually to help us estimate how many animals we actually miss when we do a survey by calculating probability detection, these detection probabilities, I should say. And we do this from past research. We've done this in the Black Hills using radio-collared animals. And so the sightability model that we have for South Dakota elk includes variables such as group size, vegetative cover, and snow cover, because these were important in the research that we've done that actually affect detection probabilities. And those two pictures kind of demonstrate what I'm trying to talk about here a little bit with detection probabilities. That first top picture, we have a group of elk, not a really large group of elk, but they're in an area with no snow cover, not a lot of elk, and some vegetative cover. And you can see that there's probably a chance that sometimes we're going to miss a group of elk like that, especially if that group gets smaller and the number of trees gets bigger. There's a better chance that we're going to miss that. So the detection probability is not 100% on that. And so the model is going to help correct for some of that. First is the picture on the bottom. We have a large group of elk, 100% snow cover, and no vegetative cover. We better not miss any of those groups. Very, very few, and none of those types of groups we're going to miss on a helicopter survey. So that's a little bit about sightability models. Now a little bit about our survey methods. So we divide the hills up into subunits when we do this aerial survey. We had 252 subunits in South Dakota plus an additional 21 in Montana, or not Montana, in Wyoming. We flew all of the subunits, every single one of them, and we flew 100% of that subunit. This year we had two helicopters for the first portion of the survey, and then the last portion we actually had three helicopters flying at the same time so that we could go through as many of the units as possible to try to eliminate any chance of double counting animals or missing animals. For each observation, we record GPS coordinates and some of those factors that affect detection probability that we just talked about, like cover, snow cover, and group size. And any group that was larger than 50, we photographed and counted later. And the biggest group that we had this year was about 860. So we've been doing this survey since 2013. That was the first year we did a complete survey. We did it again in 2016. And, of course, this winter we did it again. We're on a four-year rotation, so we should be doing the survey about every other time we meet with the commission to make recommendations for season proposals. Like I mentioned, we did fly part of Wyoming. We used our staff and our protocol, but Wyoming did fund that portion of the survey, so they've been a partner in trying to collect some information on elk. A little bit about what the survey provides. It provides abundance estimates of wintering elk in the Black Hills, and I think that's important. You know, we know from past research that a lot of these animals are migratory, and where they are in the winter is not where they're going to be in the spring and summer, and definitely not where they're going to be in the fall. But it is a snapshot of the distribution and the abundance of elk in the wintertime. And consequently, our management objectives that we have in the plan is for wintering elk. And the number that we have, the 68,000 objective, is for wintering elk in the Black Hills of South Dakota. So looking at a little bit of the results here, I threw up the 2016 results there too. And it's a little tough to make some really good comparisons here in a short period of time, but I do want to point out a few things. We did fly more of Wyoming here in 2020 versus what we did in 2016. They had a little bit more money and had some additional information. Another thing I want to point out, we did not fly Wind Cave this year. They're using some different techniques to estimate their elk herds. And last but not least, one thing I want to point out is something that you're going to see reflected in some of our recommendations for license numbers down the road here, either this month or the next time we meet, is this little bit of a change in distribution on our winter elk in Unit 2 versus Unit 3. You can see here in Unit 2, this is basically almost the outline of the Jasper Fire area. A lot of our elk winter in that Jasper Fire area. This year, again, in 2020, we counted a lot of elk there, but we counted a lot more elk down in the southern portion of Unit 3 than we did last time in 2016. So, again, that'll be some good information to have for season recommendations. So now on to the results for the Black Hills units. This excludes Custer State Park and Wind Cave. We observed a little over 5,800 animals. Using the sightability model, the estimate's going to be about 6,483, give or take, a few animals. So about 6,500 elk in the Black Hills, all of our units combined. Now looking at Custer State Park, We observed a little over 430, and our estimate's approximately 460 animals. And looking at the Wyoming side, of course, this is information that's important to have because, again, we share some of those animals. But their counts were up. We observed about 1,500 animals this year, and their estimate's close to 1,700 on the Wyoming side. So just to give you an idea of how that compared to last time, for Wyoming, looking at just the comparable areas, and we did fly more areas, so we did count more elk, so that's not completely fair, but just looking at the same areas that we flew last time versus this time, we're up about 31%. Custer State Park's about stable, and the Black Hills units are about down 10%. So a little bit about population growth here. We take all of our survey data that I just talked about, incorporate some previous information that we have from elk research in the Black Hills, and we model the population. Now, before we talk about that estimated growth rates, just obviously looking at the last estimate we had from 2016 of 7,200 and this year's estimate of 6,500, we have decreased our winter population estimate for elk in the Black Hills. Now, if you take into consideration that new 6,500 number and the current recommendations that we have on the table, which is quite a few reductions in antlerless elk licenses, we'd be looking at a very, very small growth in the population of about 2% a year. That's about where we're at for now. And with that, that's the information that I had to present, and I'd sure be willing to stick around and entertain any discussion or questions.
Questions, comments?
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Whitmire.
Thank you. This is very interesting. On the Wyoming Black Hills, just curiosity, I think you had 28 bulls per 100 cows is kind of what was in the Black Hills in general. Do you know across the border if they're managing the same as we are? Would that be also like 28 per 100 cows on their bulls, or maybe you don't know the ratio on that?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner. So when we do our herd composition surveys, these are pre-season surveys, and we are unique in a lot of states do post-season surveys. So any information they'd have, and I'm not sure Wyoming has a whole lot of information on that as far as pre-season comparison. So, we're not managing for a set bull ratio, and I don't believe that Wyoming right across the board would be doing that either.
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the collared cows, would you rather that sportsmen pass on those if they have the opportunity so you can collect more data, or if they see them, shoot them? What's your personal feelings on that?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Olson. Neither, I guess. We don't want people going after collared animals, whether they're deer, pronghorn, or elk, and selectively harvesting them. And we don't want people, when they see them, not to shoot them. So what does that mean? We want people to treat them just like an uncollared animal. If that's the animal that they would harvest, we want them to harvest them. So don't select for or against them, because capturing that harvest rate and that harvest mortality is really important to our radio collar studies. We need to know and be able to estimate how many animals are dying, looking at all sources of mortality, but how many of those are dying from hunting seasons. So, yeah, it's important that folks just treat them like an uncollared animal.
Do you have any sense of why they shifted a little bit south, or some did, if I was following you, from Unit 2 to Unit 3?
When we started getting into the elk population and increasing our harvest rates, obviously one of our objectives was to maintain the population at our objective of 6,000 to 8,000, and we're going to do that by harvesting more animals. But we still had areas of the hills where we wanted more elk, and we, not predicted isn't the right word, but some of the discussion we had, we thought it would be possible that we would redistribute some of these animals. Elk, if you put a lot of pressure on them, they will get up and go to a new area. Mm-hmm. And so I think that part of that reason that we're seeing some of that distribution is we've put a lot of pressure on that Unit 2 elk herd. There's no doubt about it. And there was a reason we did that, and we needed to, but we probably did redistribute some of those animals, would be my theory. And one thing that will be interesting is now we're going to have some GPS collars on some animals, so we're going to be able to evaluate some of that a little bit more relative to harvest pressure. So that'll be something we can look at in the future. But yeah, right now that's what we'd say is happening.
Well, it seems like go ahead, Commissioner Beese.
Commissioner Beese here. I want to thank you for the opportunity. I got to go up and do the aerial survey, and it was really enjoyable riding in the chopper that day. So if you guys ever get a chance, get to see a lot of country. On the elk numbers, there are about 6,500 in the hills, but 1,700 in Wyoming. Those elk in Wyoming, do you consider them part of our elk herd or separate? I know Wyoming managed them, but I do know them elk come out of the high country west of Deerfield and go into Wyoming in winter, and then they come back. Are you finding any of that, or is that part of our estimate for our Black Hills herd?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Beese, yeah, that's a good question. You know, we have really good information on what elk do that are wintering in the Black Hills and the South Dakota portion of the Black Hills, and we think about 10%, give or take a few here and there every year, are actually in Wyoming for during their harvest seasons. But what we don't have, and I wish I did, but what we don't have is a lot of information from animals in Wyoming and how many of them are actually being shared with us. So I honestly can't tell you how many of those 1,700 that we actually see during the fall hunting season or any of our other problem seasons. But we do share that elk herd, there's no doubt about it. And that's why we went through a great deal of effort to try and count those. You know, we put pressure on animals, we probably share a little bit more over there. When they put pressure on animals, they're probably sharing some animals back this way as well. And Wyoming has been, I don't want to speak for them, but just looking at some of the raw numbers, their harvest rates are quite a bit higher on their elk populations in their portion of the Black Hills than they are on us, than they are over here on us. So I would anticipate they're moving some elk around too.
So on the increase in tags, were they primarily on the bordering units of the hills or in the main part of the hills? Where's the tag increases coming from? What units?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Beese. Yeah, I'm not quite sure where we're going to be with that. I do know from what I've seen, most of those have been down to address some of those areas where we've seen a redistribution of elk in the southern portion of Unit 3. But we're also backing off on tags, too. I'm not quite sure where the final number is going to be when all is said and done, but we do need to back off in the big picture in order to try and to maintain our management objectives.
Questions or comments? You know, kind of like bighorn sheep, right? I mean, this seems like a continuation of a success story, really. Starting maybe before 2013, but certainly in 2013 after that WMI report, and we had that work group. And for a little historical context or perspective, and it seems like the fundamental piece that had a good foundation for everything was the aerial survey, because then people trusted the counts from which management could be done. And of course, rain and weather helped a little bit too, but the department's worked hard. You guys have worked hard. You've spent a lot of money. Like the aerial survey, I mean, the last time it came up and we asked was 200,000 or something. I mean, it's not a bad number for people to know. I mean, it's a significant effort that goes into this management, because we know how important elk are. So I guess my question, I mean, how much have we spent on aerial survey? It's money well spent, I think.
Mr. Chair, the expenditure when we conduct this survey is, by the time you include staff time and maybe per diem and travel, obviously we need lots of observers, and some of those have to come from across the state to help local staff out there. So you're probably looking at that $210,000 to $225,000, which would include staff time and the cost to have those choppers here in the state, and their ferry costs and their expenses while they're here. So we think doing this every 4 years is a valid expenditure, and I don't know if we've ever been in a spot where we have as much quantitative information and have a what we feel is a pretty solid handle on on what we have for elk and how best to manage them to meet the social demands of hunters and landowner tolerance and viewing, and it's very beneficial.
By the time you do those counts and the surveys, and then you come with your figures and recommendations as to tags and harvest rates and all that, I mean, it's run pretty smoothly and successfully. So I say congratulations to the department. Thank you.
Thanks.
Any other questions, comments? Okay, so we'll get your recommendations now or next now? Okay. Sorry.
If you want to, yeah. Yep. I'd maybe ask Andy to stay here to.
Sure.
Yeah, come on, take some bullets. No. So moving on here. So, Mr. Chair, I know Director Kirschman sent out an email yesterday, I believe, to commissioners in regards to possibly taking another 30 days of public comment because, as you know, we just completed the aerial survey last Saturday, I believe. We had to have staff analyze data, go through the information that Andy just presented to you today. We did not have a lot of opportunity for staff to have, you know, real, true, valid conversations amongst himself, nor even through our administrative level on recommendations coming here. So if it's okay with you, I would like to work off the proposal hand sheets. And I don't know if Rachel has shared those with you yet or not, but this would allow us to go out for another 30 days of public comment.
Okay.
The one effect of that would be the drawing for elk licenses would be delayed a month, and that would be something different to our applicants, but we think it's a fair and right thing to do to ensure that the public sees the results of the survey, what staff has proposed here to review the unit population objectives we've established, which in essence drives what we recommend for licenses to manage where we think we need to be. So if you're okay, we'll work from these proposal sheets here. Okay.
Let's do it.
So a lot of this falls back to the information that Andy just shared, and I want to thank Andy for putting that together in such short notice and doing a good job, as always, in presenting that. So we have had some minimal discussions on the results of the survey and looking at what we have for a population objective within the management plan. To meet that, we have to have unit-specific population objectives. I would say we have a pretty solid case of what those are going to look like. I can tell you we do have staff that want to have some further discussions and ensure we're heading down the right path when it comes to population objectives. So you will see those on some of these sheets within here. So we'll continue to work on that, but the recommendations you see here are based on that objective map. If you turn to your second page there, you can see where we try to give a scale of where we want to go, whether it's to substantially decrease, to maintain, to substantially increase a hunting unit, and that reflects the harvest strategies that we implement. So starting off with the Black Hills elk hunting season, at this time we don't have any recommended changes on units or season dates, but we just have a recommended change on the total number of licenses. So you can see there's a recommended change to offer 25 more any elk licenses. You remember Andy talked about that bull age structure within the population. We're harvesting quite a few older age bulls. We feel we have an opportunity in some of these units to offer some more any elk licenses. That's a good thing. The other change would be a reduction of, if I do my math right there, 230 antlerless elk licenses. Now keep in mind that's totality within the elk hunting units within the Black Hills. Obviously, we have some areas where we want to increase some antlerless harvest to try to find that balance between elk numbers and landowner tolerance, and we have some areas where we want to slightly increase elk numbers. So I guess in a nutshell, that would be the recommended changes we have for the Black Hills firearm elk hunting season. We probably should take a motion on each of them. If you just keep turning, you'll see we have a map there for any elk hunting units. You will see the licenses allocated by unit. There, the next page would show the antlerless elk hunting units, the appropriate number of licenses there. And just want to reiterate that this is a two-year recommendation, so these would be establishing licenses and season structures for the 2020 and 2021 hunting seasons.
So we need a motion then to approve the proposal for the Black Hills elk hunting season.
Correct.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? If not, all in favor say aye, please.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes. So then are we to the next one, which is archery elk?
Yep, archery elk. I guess we don't have a page number there. Again, another two-year recommendation. You can see the season dates for our archery elk hunting season is the month of September. We have a slight modification to the number of licenses, and again, this is tied back to the allocation of firearm licenses. We have a objective or strategy within our elk management plan that kind of helps us determine the number of archery licenses in proportion to the number of rifle or firearm licenses. So all in all there, you'll see I don't think it's much of a change. I think it's a similar in the total number of licenses, but again, in offering of some additional bull archery licenses there. So we just have that one recommended change for you at this time for the archery elk season.
Okay, then I'll need a motion to approve archery elk hunting season proposal.
So moved. Second.
Any discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes. Archery elk passes. Let's
see, next seasons here would be for Custer State Park. This would be for our any elk firearm season. Again, a two-year recommendation. You can see the season dates there for the month of October. We do have a recommended change from the proposal. Again, we didn't know what we were going to find within the park from the aerial survey. We do have a recommended change for you to consider, which would essentially just be retaining the current allocation of the eight any elk firearm licenses we have there within the park. We did have some discussion. There likely is an opportunity where we could provide some additional licenses, but one thing that I forgot about, and staff reminded me, given the fact that we have some of these Hunt for Habitat license holders out there, we have some that have chosen not to hunt yet with that elk license, mm-hmm. and we know there's going to be more that will be successful in drawing that Hunt for Habitat license, and we do know that Custer State Park is open to that, so we know not all of them would come to Custer State Park. There might be some that choose to pursue a bull elk up in Harding County or some other place, but just with that in mind and understanding and remembering the value of the viewability of elk within the park, we come forward here with essentially for both the any elk and on the next page of the archery elk hunting seasons to no change to what we had last year. So 8 firearm and 3 archery.
Is there a motion to approve Custer State Park elk hunting season proposal?
So
second?
Second.
Any discussion? If not, all in favor of the Custer State Park elk hunting season proposal, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes.
Mr. Chair, was that for both the any elk and the early archery?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, the next one, I think the final elk one would be for the prairie elk hunting season. So this one here I do want to spend a little bit more time on and ensure we cover everything. I guess at the top of that action sheet, I did find an error, and that was my error. It says finalization of March 5th through the 6th. Just note that'll be changed to April 2nd, 3rd when we finalize in Sioux Falls. Going to the recommended changes on the second page there, for proposed changes 1 and 2, we do have some, again, recommended changes to those changes on this proposal. If I can go through those here first, I think it might help streamline what I want to go over here. So the recommended change from your proposal would be to make an adjustment to the number of licenses from 68 any and 73 antlerless to 78 Annie and 178 antlerless elk. This is a result predominantly revolving around a lot of the elk damage complaints, depredation issues we are experiencing with landowners down in Bennett County, maybe up into, I can't remember, what are the other counties associated with that, Andy? Jackson and maybe that southwest part of Millett, but predominantly in Bennett County. We want to utilize hunters to help manage that population and try to reduce some of that depredation that's occurring. So essentially that's where most of those, if not all of those, increases in those antlerless elk licenses are coming from. The second recommended change from the proposal, Mr. Chair, if you remember, we have a proposal out there right now to add a West River unit, essentially a super unit in West River. In having some discussions with our regional staff here in the central part of the state and then with the Lower Brule reservation there, tribal wildlife officers there, we do have a recommendation to remove the Lower Brule Indian Reservation from that Prairie WRA unit. So that would be a recommended change there to exclude that area from that new unit. Moving on to recommended change number three, again, where a lot of those antlerless licenses coming from in the prairie are a result of management actions. And if you remember, if you look at on that population objective, you'll see our management objective within Bennett County or that unit is to substantially decrease that population. So we want to bring in and establish two additional antlerless elk units for Unit 3. You would see the season dates there of November 1 through December 31. And then in addition to that, another antlerless only season beginning January 1 and concluding at the end of February. Again, that's where those antlerless elk licenses that are being added will go towards. And again, just to meet our population objective there. Recommended change number four. In conjunction with the proposed unit boundary change to Unit 15A, which would be Butte County there, we would like to establish a Unit 15B for antlerless elk harvest only. It would be an antlerless only season. It would be the same unit as 15A is now. We're just calling it 15B because it would have unique season dates. Those season dates would be December 1 through January 31, just to try to provide some opportunity there. I held that cow license years ago and was not successful in seeing elk or therefore harvesting an elk, which isn't a big deal, but we do know there is some movement within that population that is shared with Wyoming, and at least from what I've been hearing from staff is maybe those elk are coming back to the South Dakota side a little later in the season, and if we can maybe make some modifications there, we can be a little bit more successful in harvesting some antlerless elk there to meet our population objective. Last but not least is the fifth recommended change from the proposal. I believe we had two representatives here, landowners from Harding County, that came up and testified on this topic. They did mention a meeting here that staff had, I believe, up in Riva with landowners within Harding County talking about that unit. We are in agreement, and we do have a recommendation here at the request of the landowners to split Harding County in half via west and east, utilizing U.S. Highway 85 there. As the landowners indicated, Harding County is a large county, and we obviously don't have elk habitat in all of Harding County, but we do have some elk habitat spread throughout that county with the Cave Hills and Slim Buttes and West Short Pines and whatnot. And we do have some potential concern there of maybe some over-harvest in some of those. And if we can help distribute hunters out there and manage that herd appropriately, we're okay moving forward with this recommendation. So I guess in a nutshell, that's quite a bit. I want to come back up to the proposed changes from last year, Mr. Chairman, at the top, just to remember those items 3 through 6. we would like to move forward with and have no recommended changes on those respective changes. So if that's clear as mud, we'll try to answer any questions.
All I know is we need a motion to approve the prairie elk hunting season, right?
Correct.
Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes. All right, here's
one
what
question.
I'm Mr. Chairman. Commissioner
Beast. On that that West River unit, or the prairie unit, does that include, they'll be able to hunt those elk that are out on the Cheyenne River? Is that part of that?
Yes, there would be portions of the Cheyenne River within that unit, yes.
Because there's like a couple hundred of them out there south of Union Center and that country, and that's in a unit now.
Correct. Yes, I don't know how much confidence I would have in providing you an estimate, but I think the number you just threw out there is one that we're familiar with. Mm-hmm.
All right, so here I'm going to... Oh, sorry, Commissioner Spring, sorry.
Did you have a count on those on that Cheyenne River area south of 34 at all? Or did you count out there on the elk?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Spring, we did not conduct the aerial survey in that portion of South Dakota. It was restricted to the Black Hills units.
I see. Mm-hmm. I'd heard numbers, and I just wondered if you had the right number.
Of course we do. No, I don't know.
Are we good? You're good?
Yeah, I don't know if your motion was on the amendment, or did we formally?
I don't know as we need a motion to amend something that hasn't been in a proposal yet. So, I mean, your proposal is as amended, or as you gave it today, right? Or was it amending what we've already?
Mr. Chair, it's amending at your current proposal.
Oh, well, then we need a motion to amend the proposal. So, second? Discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so now we need a motion to approve the amended proposal.
Correct.
So moved.
Any discussion on that? If not, all in favor of the amended proposal say aye. Any opposed? All right, so that passes. I'd like to get